Okay, review of implementation plan for new asset allocation.
So I'll be referencing this document, which today's date, at the bottom says asset allocation implementation plan. And I don't typically walk through a presentation page by page, but today I'm going to walk through a presentation page by page. So it's not terribly dense, it's about 20 pages, so I think it'll flow smoothly. But I think all of these pieces are really important, partially due to some of the questions we've already heard. So page 4, the executive summary of this highlights what we're doing here. So at the December board meeting, we selected the FFP 4-year, okay. September 14th, we went through the liquidity portfolio finalists, so we have that piece in place. And now we have to start thinking about how we're actually moving money to get to the future state, the future asset allocation. And so this presentation really focuses on these three steps. One, we want to ensure the appropriate fulfillment of your fiduciary duties, of our fiduciary duties. Consistency with the overall investment objectives throughout the transition. And that's pretty important because as we're moving big chunks of money to and fro, we want to make sure that the overall game plan isn't thrown out of whack for any period of time. So this helps give us a check on that. Then the third, coordination of activities, because we have a lot of folks involved here between board, staff, consultants, and investment managers. We want to make sure that that's well coordinated. So what we're doing then is we're outlining a three-phase game plan here. The first is the liquidity subportfolio, which we've talked about quite a bit, and we'll show you the details of that next. Then we talk about the growth and risk diversifying subportfolios realignment, so changing some of the allocations there. And then phase 3, to the question brought up earlier, risk diversifying subportfolio completion, because there's more work to be done there. And then the annual funding plan. And so how we start working this into our annual cycle of getting the employer contributions in. So let's jump ahead to page 6 then. And we'll talk about restructuring the fixed income. So this is how we're going to now, when we hire Insight, DFA, and SIT, how are we actually going to move the money? And so the third bullet point here is we're saying we expect to finalize the contracts in October and expected funding on or about mid-November. And then the first benefit payments won't happen until January. So even once we get these things funded and in place, we're just going to draw from cash to make sure that they're functioning the way they should be before we actually use them to responsibly pay a first benefit payment.
Just for one second.
Yes, sir.
Could you just, for my benefit, just walk through mechanically, briefly, how that is done? And I guess my questions relate to, do you make a determination a month in advance as to what your cash requirements are going to be? Are these three funds then sure. directed to make that available in equal amounts? Is it prorated? Or by prorated, I mean, is there one-third, one-third, one-third? How does the money flow?
Yeah. So when we take a look at this, kind of the foundation here is the actuarial projection for the next 4 years. The board said you want 4 years of benefit payments. So we have actuarial projection of 4 years of benefit payments. We'll back into what that means on a per month basis. That's communicated to the managers and specifically to Insight in their quarterbacking rule. And they'll say there's $35 million. The next thing Insight needs to know is how much is going to come from the other two managers.
Right.
And we're still establishing the communication routines here, but this will be something where the SIT portfolio will pay off its net income into the pool, and we'll communicate that in advance. The DFA will cover a third of the remaining, and Insight will take care of the rest of it. So Insight will know up front how much needs to be delivered and by what date, how much is going to be coming from the other two portfolios. And then this is all going to be flowing through my office here on a monitoring basis. So say we need $35 million by the 20th of the month. Confirm all wires are coming in. Confirm A, that the portfolio has been constructed appropriately to throw off that benefit payment. Confirm that this comes in a day in advance or a couple days in advance. And then test to see how accurate we were, projection versus actual. So that's all going to be flowing through my office. So the actuarial will give the projections. I will communicate that to the manager. The manager will set up the flows, and the coordination will happen through my office.
With a cash buffer.
With a cash buffer.
Where, yes. I was going to say. This is monthly.
Yeah. So you're going to have to hit. You're going to have to figure out what an AP is, an accounts payable type of procedure,
yep.
in December, in order to have that cash available in January.
January, yes.
And with a buffer. I mean, you can't sit there and say, $5 short.
Right? No, we've got that 1% cash position, so there's always $70 million there, which in $70 million is about 2 months of benefit payments. So we've got a pretty healthy buffer there.
Interesting. All right.
So on page 6, it says liquidity program will be funded liquidating core and core plus fixed income strategies except for AFL-CIO. Why was AFL-CIO
exempted?
Why was that not?
So we talk about it later in this presentation too, but shorthand is that the AFL-CIO strategy is going to be used as our U.S. Treasury proxy.
Okay.
So we have that just kind of earmarked separately. Okay, so then taking a look at page 7, we give our first check on the portfolio. And so we have in this in the pretty chart the current policy and the current asset allocation, and then phase 1. And the only real change here to phase 1 is that we're seeing a slight decrease in the green bar at the top, which is public equity, offset by a slight increase in the blue, which is public fixed income. So we'll talk about the rebalancing here as how we achieve that in a moment. But on the right-hand side, then, let's take a look at the numbers and see how it models out. So making this change decreases expected return, and these are 10-year projections, right? So 10 years, we would expect the current portfolio to generate a 7.1% return, the phase one portfolio to generate a 6.6% return. So it decreases. We expect standard deviation, or the volatility of the portfolio, to also decrease from 12.1 to 11.0, and the Sharpe ratio, which is really just kind of a ratio between return for risk, also decreases from 0.48 to 0.45. So, okay, we see this decrease. The question then becomes, how long does this last? Because this is phase one, and we know we want to get to phase two, phase three, and our target. So phase one is basically going to last somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 months until we get phase two lined up for implementation, which we're currently projecting to be March. And given volatility in the markets, when we talk about a 7.1 versus 6.6, not terribly dramatic. Directionally, we would rather see higher returns than lower returns, sure, but we're decreasing the risk of the profile of the plan as well. Mm-hmm. And as we make this transition, we think this is probably a prudent way to go. Going from 7.1 to 6.6 is acceptable ranges. And then pages 8 and 9 show how the money actually moves. So what we have here is a lineup of all of the strategies in the plan today with their actual allocations. And then this column that has the box around it, titled Rebalance, is where we show the money coming out of the equity side to some extent. So we're basically decreasing our growth portfolio from 74.5% today down to 70.6. And then we show the allocations on page 9 across the fixed income, where we would be redeeming out of the Goldman Sachs Core Plus, the Lord Abbott Core Plus, PIMCO Total Return and Lazard, and allocating then to Insight DFA and SIT. So you can see how those numbers come out and go in.
How was the decision made to remove money from those particular assets?
Well, so on the growth portfolio, these are assets that we don't view as having a long-term role in the portfolio, so it's an incremental step in that direction. So that's the part of the growth portfolio. And then the fixed income.
Are you saying they haven't had good returns and that's why? Or what? Or the way that they're investing it doesn't fit? What?
They don't. When we took a look at the action, both. What the board adopted in terms of the new asset allocation, these particular mandates don't have roles there. So they might have a role in terms of transitioning over to the new asset allocation. But, for example, real assets, the PIMCO All Asset Fund, the real assets were not specifically targeted in the new asset allocation as having a role there. The REIT allocation, which would be the international REIT allocation with Invesco, and that's a little confusing because we have a couple of Invesco real estate strategies, but this one was the international REIT. The overall REIT allocation dropped and went to domestic only. So international REITs don't have a place there. So that sort of thing.
Okay. And Invesco was international? Who was the international?
Yeah, Invesco, that's the international REIT.
Okay. And Adelante?
A reduction in the target allocation to REITs.
Okay.
Point of clarification might be, though, that today you're not approving this as a rebalancing. We will bring back a rebalancing to you for.
Okay, this is just showing us what may come down the line, what you're looking at to bring down the line.
Yeah, and that's a great preview. I mean, because the three phases are going to require three board actions to approve new targets and ranges associated with each one of these. So this is educational today. We'll come back at the end of October, most likely, with the first investment resolution to say, here's our phase one targets and ranges so we can start to move money in November. So today, you're just hearing us out. October, we'll take a vote.
Okay. In the liquidity, the 1, 2, 3, 4 funds that were going to wipe out and it's going to go to Insight, DFA, and SIT. Are they going to, when Insight gets this money, and again, I've got two questions. Let me try and get the first one out. Are they going to take, say, some of the investments that GSAM is involved in, are they going to keep those, it'll just transfer over to Insight? Or are we going to sell everything with GSAM and then Insight is going to go out and find people that fit with what we're looking for? Which is, I don't know.
It's a good transition management question.
Yeah.
So when we get there, we can look specifically at the portfolios. My guess is knowing what Insight, DFA, and SIT hold in their portfolios against what our current slate holds, there's not a lot of overlap.
There's not an overlap. So maybe it'll be up like 90% of looking for new or going elsewhere. Okay.
Definitely Insight will take a look at the legacy portfolios. If there's any securities they want to move in kind, will affect that because that's the cheapest option.
And these firms have been informed that we're about to pull all of this money.
And these firms were involved in the search process.
This goes to my second question. In the old portfolio, in the old investment process, we would not have more than 5% in any one investment. And we're looking at doing 1.6 million or 1.65 million by pulling it from these four liquidities and putting it all with Insight, DFA, and SIT. That's more than the 5%, or when they invest it, it'll be less than 5% with each of the.
No. So we're taking a look here and saying. The liquidity portfolio has a 24% target allocation. So when we talked to the board, July, I guess it was, said, you know, we're going to be looking for a multi-manager structure, but these are going to be fewer, larger relationships. And so Insight is going to have a 10.7% position initially. That gets drawn down over the course of the year, then replenished. So these are not going to have 5% limits. Our operating numbers are 15%. If the board wants to express limits, we can have an investment resolution that the board would express.
The only reason I bring that up is because I think one of the saving graces of our investment portfolio in the past has been that we were so diversified, and part of that was because we weren't allowed to put more than 5% in any one piece. And I think that saved us in certain circumstances. So I worry a little bit about how much we put with one person, but
yeah,
and I don't feel real comfortable with. But again, I mean, we're depending on your expertise, and this is a whole new way we're going. And I just want to feel comfortable.
I want to make sure we frame the 5%. That's been a practice. The policy was actually higher than that.
Okay, how high was the policy? 10%?
I believe it was 10.
Yeah. Jerry, when we spoke earlier, I think what you're referencing is the 5%. Per an issuer of equity. So I think the 5% you're talking about that's currently in the policy is saying Sisera cannot hold more than 5% of all of, say, Coca-Cola's outstanding equity, not 5% with an individual manager.
It was kind of an informal discussion in the past that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I.
You're talking about manager concentration.
But I just want to point out that 5% of, where are we at, 7.5 billion now?
Yeah.
5% of that is 375 million. And that's pretty close to the.
This is 1.6.
That's for three of them. But there's diversification within the within the group that we're. It's not just. I mean, Insight is going to diversify investments in and of itself. So. Yeah.
And keep in mind what these investments are. These are short duration, high quality credit and government. So we're basically saying within this portion where the investments themselves have a lower volatility profile, we're okay having a larger per manager allocation. If we're talking growth assets, if we're talking aggressive equities, you're dealing with a much smaller number. And just so the board kind of understands where I'm thinking, turn back a couple of pages to the investment procedures and section 114. These are the. This is our working document. This is not finalized yet, but this is our working internal limits. We're saying
15% liquidity.
15% on liquidity. So any one individual liquidity mandate could have up to 15%, not above that.
Okay.
Because it's a lower volatility profile, lower risk profile. On the growth assets, so equity, private equity, real estate, saying a 10% max. Diversifying, we're saying an 8% max. So this would represent kind of my internal risk threshold. If the board says we disagree with that, you issue an investment resolution that restricts that further.
That's what I was looking for. Yep. Thank you. I didn't identify it earlier. I got it now.
Back to page, it's not really on the page, but a little bit about the replenishment. Presumably at the end of the year, we got $400 million that have been roughly taken out of these buckets. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that these will be replenished in a dynamic basis. We're not waiting until year end to replenish the $400 million. Right?
We actually are. These are going to draw down. And so the idea here is we go through what we're calling an annual funding plan. So it may be just a calendar of events so the board can kind of frame the discussion here.
It's actually covered in. We'll have that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Then I'll wait.
I won't steal Ed's thunder.
Don't do it.
He gets very nervous.
When you're inside the cell.
Okay. Are we still on phase one in the model?
Were there any other questions on phase one?
No wonder those guys were so happy when they left last time when they came in. I'm good.
Okay.
Let's move forward then. Page 10 starts us on the growth and risk diversifying. Page 11 has a couple of highlights here. So here we're talking about restructuring the exposures of the publicly traded markets, identifying and allocating to private market proxies, and restructuring exposures to risk diversifying. So, okay, restructuring exposures to publicly traded, we're talking about rebalancing across our publicly traded equities and fixed income managers, or equities in the growth portfolio. Identifying and allocating to private market proxies. So we know that it takes time to build our exposures to private equity managers. It takes them time to call the capital and everything. So this is our placeholders. Until they call the capital, where do we invest it? And how do we invest it so that we ensure that we're getting the whole portfolio risk-return characteristics that we desire? So that's that part. And then restructuring exposures, cross-risk diversifying. So what we were talking about a moment ago with the AFL-CIO, this factors into there. And we note that this is expected to take place by March of 2017. By the way, there's a calendar in the appendix that takes us board meeting by board meeting by board meeting, what we're hoping to accomplish at each one of these.
Good luck. That's a whole lot of stuff, all of this.
It is. It's a whole lot of stuff. It's an ambitious schedule for sure. And we've had ambitious schedules before, too, and sometimes they get delayed, but we'd rather be prudent. Page 12 then talks about the public market exposures a little bit. So structuring this is going to require identifying a method to gain S&P 500 exposure. So we're talking more about very low cost exposure to the US equity markets, large cap core kind of exposure. And a couple ways we could do that is getting an index provider and just go very low cost index, or potentially using our relationship with Parametric and using an overlay strategy here. And we talked about that before. So another decision we'll be presenting you in the future. selecting managers likely, plural, for emerging market equity exposure. So this is another one that we don't currently have dedicated emerging market exposures within the portfolio, so we have to go out and find that. And we're expecting to bring the request to you in October to actually launch that search so that we're on the right calendar to bring back managers for that allocation. And then realigning the allocations within the strategies. So we'll talk about rebalancing again.
Ed, before we leave 12,
yes.
Under the first bullet, there's a sub-bullet that talks about index. Okay, I'm okay with that one. / overlay providers for lost cost implementation. I have no idea what
low cost.
All right. Got it.
I think you meant lost coast.
We might be losing cost.
Sounds like a vacation spot.
Yes. For the record, low cost.
All right.
Lost vis-a-vis gone.
It's not lost cause implementation, I know.
We hope not.
Yeah, right.
Vis-a-vis some other.
Some other lost.
Vis-a-vis.
It's a tough room, Gary.
So everything on page 12 is focusing on the public markets. Page 13 focuses on the private markets. And so we know that there is the private markets RFP underway. So that certainly factors into the timing here as well. But what we're outlining big picture is how we're going to accomplish the asset allocation. So we note that it takes years to fully implement a private markets program. And in the meantime, we're trying to get a private equity allocation of 12%. We're currently at around 9%, so we have to figure out how to get another 3% there. And the private credit allocation, 16%, we're essentially at zero today.
Yeah.
So those are big builds. Now, private credit generally gets deployed faster than private equity, which is good. That'll help us along the timeline, but it's still a years, not months kind of thing. And so the last bullet point here, the main one, is that we want to identify proxies. And in the private equity space, lots of times we use small cap equities to proxy that and say, okay, it gives us as close to the risk return profile as we can get with private equity without actually getting private equity. But it has its challenges. There are liquidity issues here. So if capital is called when the markets are down, that creates an issue for us. So what we're saying here is we want to take a look at this closer, and we want to bring back to you the research on what we recommend for private market proxies. So there are drawbacks to private credit. Typically we use domestic high yield, similar kind of liquidity issues specifically with high yield credit. And so we'll be coming back to you with more research on these two areas. And then page 14 talks about the risk diversifying portfolios. And here we talk more specifically about AFL-CIO being our U.S. Treasury proxy, probably an interim solution, but we'll take a look at that down the road. And also the Wellington Real Total Return as an interim solution here to achieve the target weight. But longer term, we're going to have to do some searches on that. And so we want to have a search process for the risk diversifying targeted for February, and the funding of strategies to then coincide with the annual funding in the summer of next year. So how does this all look then? Page 15, you see phase one and phase two on the bar charts look almost identical because you're not seeing the increase in the private assets yet. They're being held in the public market proxies. So they actually look identical. But because we're not actually getting to, or because we're holding them there, we have the results on the right-hand side. We're increasing the expected return from 6.6 to 6.9%. Volatility slightly goes up, 11.0 to 11.3, and the Sharpe ratio increases as a result. And then pages 16 and 17 show the expected dollar-by-dollar movement of funds.
And again, this would be coming, the next investment resolution would be coming back to the board to reflect these new targets.
When is phase two going to start?
So we want to have phase two completed by March. It would essentially start
now?
October.
October would be our first.
With the launch of the emerging market search?
Yep.
And we want it finished by March.
It'll be a fun 5 months, right?
Jesus.
That doesn't mean that all the assets will be necessarily deployed by March, though.
But yeah. The game plan will be in place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on 16, where we look at the bottom of the rebalance column, it looks like what we're really moving to here with $600 million to emerging market equity and $524 million to U.S. low volume.
Mm-hmm. Low volatility.
Low volatility. Yes. All right.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. low volatility is a placeholder in there for one of the things we might look at as a proxy, holding place for private equity and private credit. Mm-hmm. So the board hasn't taken action to fund that, treat that as a placeholder for a conversation yet to be had.
I'm looking at you because you're going to have a lot of late nights.
Okay. It's only $1.2
billion. Hmm? A lot of late nights.
Yeah. Only. I'm sorry. Herbie, do you have a question?
If I may, going back on slide Ed 13.
Yeah. Mm. That's too long.
This is the about small cap domestic equities that'll be used until you ramp up for private equity. Make
America may be used.
May be used.
Yes.
And those are small cap.
What are they now?
Yes. That's right.
What we got some good choices.
Oh, it would be if a capital call happens for the private equity while the markets are down.
Oh,
in the public equities. Yeah,
capital call from the small cap portfolio.
If capital was called while the markets.
So private capital. If you need to deploy the private capital,
yes.
Liquidate
the
small cap.
That's right. Bingo. We want to take a look at some basket proxies here that maybe it could improve our volatility profile or our liquidity profile.
Could you explain a little bit to the board the timing issue and the impact on the rate of return while we ramp up the private equity phase two over a period of years?
Yeah, so, and that's an overarching point about this presentation. I think you're hitting on a good one, is that when we're making our way through this transition, we want to be cognizant of our risk return profile and that we're putting it in place so that we can achieve the expectations. So what we're talking about here overall is something that we sit here in today in September, and we're putting together a plan that gets us there in summer of next year when we get the annual funding. We basically have our program in place.
Which is good, because it's
but
low risk.
It will still take time to get those proxies, get the money out of the proxies and get it fully called by the private markets, which can take another 3, 4, 5 years. It just depends on how fast that progresses. So that we will never be fully implemented in this portfolio until then. In the meantime, we have the transition. So when we look at the portfolio today and we say, okay, what's our risk-return profile look like? The punchline that we're getting to here is that after the annual funding plan, we are in what we call phase three, and at that point, we'll have an expected return of 6.8 mm-hmm. with a standard deviation of 10.5. Now, 6.8 and 10.5 6.8 doesn't hit the actuarial assumed rate, right? It's a little bit lower. So there's some probability around that, whether we get that number or not. This is a 10-year projection, right? And your actuary is probably looking further into the future than that, probably 30 years. Wow. So there is a timing difference. And while it is lower, that's something we have to be aware of. But we don't see how we could do much in terms of increasing the risk profile or increasing the return without increasing the risk to get us any closer. So we have to recognize that on a 10-year basis, we're coming up a little bit short on that until the program is fully implemented. So it should migrate over time to what we're assuming. But
I think also to keep in mind, too, because I've had discussions with Siegel on this in the past, because, you know, as everyone's aware, you know, say in private equity, we're doing, you know, we're overcommitting by 200% because we're recognizing, hey, it takes a while to ramp up those investments. So over time, we've actually had the same type of possible impact to the plan, and that we haven't been fully committed to private equity, even though we're taking that into consideration when we're adopting our 7.25 or now it's 7.5 or 7. And so we've had that over time. But, you know, when you look at you know, the pension plan and how we're looking at over 20 or 30 years you know, a 1 to 2 year or even three year implementation period becomes somewhat more of a blip on the radar. And then it also becomes, okay, well, what's the opportunity cost of that? Which is very hard to determine unless it's looked at in hindsight. So it's not like we could determine, hey, you know what, we're not going to be there for another year or 2 years, so let's, you know, further discount the 7% based on that. It's very difficult to do because also we might have the experience where we have these investments in these other categories that are actually outperforming if they had actually been in that actual bucket. So, you know, and then also to further add to it is that you do have the 18-month delay in implementing the rates from when the valuation was done. So that buys you a little bit of additional implementation time as well. So just to add some additional information on that.
Yeah, the goal should really be, the board has expressed a long-term target. From my, you know, from your investment staff, from your staff perspective, period, we want to prudently get the organization to that target as quickly as possible, as prudently as possible. You know, I think Veris has laid out a pretty reasonable timeline for getting there. And you know, the tracking error associated with not being at your target, it could be positive, it could be negative. We know it's undesired tracking error, so we just want to get prudently through that, and then we can take a look and see, you know, what happened in the interim. Did we have appropriate proxies? Did we have appropriate exposures? Was the plan fully invested according to the board's wishes? But just get us there. Whether that results in, you know, a lower return or a higher return, we can only measure after the fact.
Okay. So page 18, phase 3. Get an annual funding plan. And you can turn ahead then to page 19, the annual contribution to the plan, the large annual contribution. Refresh the liquidity sub-portfolio, Jerry, to your question. Fund the selected risk diversifying strategies and rebalance the portfolio to target. So we're anticipating this. The risk diversifying strategies being presented in April so that they would be able to be funded in July. And so page 20 then helps us take a look at this and make sure we're on track. Here we're looking at the differences between phase 2 and phase 3 columns. And then the difference between phase 3 and between phase 3 and target is the long-term capital actually being called by the private markets. So you can see here a significant reduction in public equity, the green, over those two phases. With the offsetting increase in the private equity and private credit, most notably. So you can see private credit on the target bar, third one down. That's our 16% exposure there.
Jumps.
And then also risk diversifying, let's call it purple, towards the bottom, increases significantly from phase 2 to phase 3. And so does it do what we think? Well, on the right-hand side, phase 2, phase 3 gives us a decrease in return from 6.9 to 6.8, but look at the noticeable decrease in standard deviation from 11.3 to 10.5. So that's why we're doing it, essentially. That is one measure of risk decreasing. The other would be drawdown risk. So in the event of a market correction, we hope that we would have better protection built into the portfolio with the risk diversifying sub-portfolio. And then phase 3 to target. So, okay, once we finally do get to target with our current market assumptions, that gets us from the 6.8 to 7.5. Okay, now we've built in a little bit of breathing room there. And standard deviation also decreases again, 10.5 to 9.8. And that's largely due to the valuation and the lower volatility of the private markets. We could debate whether that's for real or not, but from a modeling perspective, that's how it shows up. And the Sharpe ratio increasing to 0.61. And then pages 21 and 22 give us the rebalancing here. So we show again that we are making incremental investments in the U.S. low vol, which is one of the potential holdings, and the S&P 500. Increased allocation to Allianz. And then liquidity gets refunded on page 22. So we're anticipating that $220 million is going back into the liquidity program. And then the risk diversifying managers, TBD, also on page 22. That's the bulk of this rebalancing. So we're showing this as a $300 million contribution as rough analysis.
Well, we're losing a lot of old horses.
Yeah, it's a different car with a different engine. It's
yeah.
It's different tires. Pages 24 and 25
guess we're
have all the excitement for
injection,
you.
Right?
Apparently, it's electric.
It's the electric car.
Going to electric.
And driverless electric.
Exactly.
Pages 24 and 25 help coordinate the activity I mentioned earlier. What we have here for each of these months, as we look at 24, for example, at the top October, we have the 1026 board meeting. The topics we want to talk about are the structure of the public equities portfolio and likely seeking approval to launch the emerging markets equity search. Not too bad. So each one of these has board meeting broken out, and you can see what we're trying to accomplish at the board meeting. Gives you a sense that some of these are more lengthy than others, but I don't think any of them are too overwhelming in terms of the amount of time we'd be asking from you to get this implementation plan underway.
As always, these are targeted dates. There may be some fluctuation depending on how things go over the next few months. And I think it's really important. I think that Ed has done a very nice job in presenting this implementation plan. I think it's important as we move forward that if any of you have questions or comments on this process or the plan, that you make sure to communicate that to us, because this is somewhat of a departure from what we've done in the past. And I feel like the trustees need to have comfort in what we're doing and how we're doing it.
And maybe I could just highlight for the trustees kind of where I see some feedback points along the way here. Calendar-wise, every January we're going to do a review of all the investment resolutions that the board has, either standing investment resolutions or new resolutions, and say, this is how we've complied with them, this is our procedure. So you get that feedback there. All your investment resolutions have been implemented. Every March we take a look at the capital market assumptions. Okay, we've got a new set of actuarial projections for the liquidity, its allocation has changed. We have new capital market assumptions from Verus. Here's our new targets. Let's have a conversation about that. And you can see kind of how the capital market assumptions have changed year to year. Every June, we have the annual funding plan. And Jerry, to your point, the liquidity program will be going through drawdown mode for 12 months, and then we'll have a funding plan that says, this is your staff's recommendation about where to draw the replenishing funds. And the reason we're doing that is so we can basically have money that is not in motion as much. The liquidity program is always in motion by design, and so we've taken care of all the transaction costs there. We've been very thoughtful about the construction, but we're moving money less often within growth and diversifying, so that money is not going to be traded as frequently. So, and the reason we're doing this in June, so we have optionality about using employer prepayments to be part of that top-up or pulling down some growth assets, but we would come back to you and says, here's our game plan. This is what we're seeing in the marketplace. This is what we would propose to do.
But if you draw down the money, I mean, presumably during the course of a year, you're going to have contributions coming in, and some of it comes in a steady manner, and then there's prepayments sometimes, and there's big chunks that come in. You want that money working for you as well. So where is that money going to be?
Sure. And the money that comes in month to month is relatively modest compared to the big slug of prepayments that come in at the end of July.
Right. So let's take the July payments.
Yep.
Are those sitting in? They're not sitting in just a bucket someplace.
No. That's why we want to come to you in June and says, this is what we propose, how to replenish liquidity. And it could be, we're expecting $200 million in employer prepayments coming in July. We want to take all of that and refill the liquidity bucket. Or we want to deploy some of that in liquidity and move some risk diversifying assets over here because of what we're seeing in relative valuation land.
So month to month, you might not be making that many changes.
Correct.
But on a July time frame, so you wouldn't be waiting until the end of the calendar year.
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, so that's what pages 21 and 22 contemplate. It's basically saying on 22, towards the bottom, you see cash, and then right underneath that, it says contribution, and then italic. So that's anticipating that it would be for this purpose, for illustrative purposes, $300 million comes into the plan. That's what that $300 million is under the July target. And then we're showing how that $300 million gets allocated and rebalanced across the portfolio. So at the very bottom, you see the total there is the $300 million.
Right.
Typically, that adds up to zero because it's a rebalancing that pluses and minuses should equal. In this case, we're actually adding to the plan. So it gets us to there. And then the new column shows us how we're allocated after the rebalancing is done.
Okay.
Thank you. Keep us honest.
And it's described 75 here, and I think we talked about 70, but as the cushion, I assume, on the right-hand bottom.
It's a 1% position, so we're kind of saying we're assuming some growth here in the overall balance.
Yeah. I assume debt, short-term, low-duration.
Short-term investment fund as a vehicle offered through the custodial bank.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Short-term tier one paper. Yeah, very high quality, very liquid.
No, there are no government guarantees in any of this, but...
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Tim, I noticed that you're in this last page on 22, that we're going to make we're going to actually increase from 5 to 6.5% the allocation to Allianz. Can you give us a sense of what's driving that allocation,
yeah,
as opposed to going into the bucket of to be determined?
Again, as a proxy, we know high yield is going to be one of the pieces we look at as a proxy for private credit.
Okay.
Whether that goes all into Allianz or goes into a more diversified basket of securities, that's an analysis yet to be completed.
Okay.
And I will say my staff has been working on some analysis. I know Varis has been working on some analysis. We need to share notes there and come up with a game plan for the board. But this is just treat this as some loose proxies at this point. The allocation to the proxies will go up by 6.5%. The placement of that will probably, in all likelihood, change before the board actually implements this.
I just, for one, I want to say I really greatly appreciate having a plan. And even if it's just a target and it has to shift a little bit, it tells me that you all are thinking out, way out, with the process, and this is a very complex process, so I thank you for the work. I know this has been a tremendous project, and it's still ongoing. Thank you again for your hard work on this.
Okay.
Agreed to, but...
it's everything up to the butt.
Yeah,
there's no butt. Jerry, there's no butt.
Yeah, okay. In the past, we've made... Supposedly, this is a quote that I picked up at a lot of conferences. Usually our funds make maybe between 50 and 60% on our investments over the year. Do you predict that this will probably be in that ballpark, the total fund?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Our investments
must
have
be
made...
just your investments.
No, 50 to 60?
I don't think ours are doing that
50
well.
50 to 60, the fund... And that money was used to fund the system.
Of the benefit payments, 50 to 60% came from investment growth.
Okay.
The investments. That's what I'm talking about. Do you predict the returns. Do you predict that that's going to kind of stay with this new system?
Our expected rate of return on the overall plan has not changed materially. Our allocation of where benefit payments are coming from has changed dramatically.
I'd probably, a function of that is the fact that you've been in net contributions.
Yeah.
So being in net contributions allows you to grow that base larger and larger so that money is put to work in a positive return environment.
Yeah.
If that tips and you start going into net withdrawals, even though you're still getting contributions in, but on a net basis you're paying out more each month, each year, than you're taking in, that math changes. So almost regardless of what your investment returns are, this is the most prudent risk return portfolio we can put together for you. That's an interesting metric as an outcome. I don't know if we can control it though.
Okay.
I thought we had tipped.
I think you had, but I think the reduction in the assumed rate changes that math.
Changes that, yeah.
So you might
Yeah, contributions tipped up from our earlier expectations.
Another year or something.
So we're in net redemptions on a... I think if we include the income from dividends, we're still positive. But if we just say contributions versus benefit payments, we're negative.
That's what.
Yeah. Right. I wonder, because the standard argument used to be that the contributions from the employers was not totally what ran the system, that the investments made 50 to 60%, and that, and so I'm just, we're in the same ballpark. We're going to be going that way.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't materially changed that. The question would be, when we start to tip negative, you're going to start to see that relative mix change simply because your benefit payments are going to be higher
in the future. More people.
You're trying to improve your capital base.
Yeah. But then again, you've also had 70 years of capital growth.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Ed, question on the table, any one of these pages, 20, I guess. Is the public equity rating Seahawk green or is that San Jose teal? How do you answer this question?
I'm almost certain that is San Jose teal, but I can double check to be sure.
I thought that's what you might think.
I'm thinking that's what it is.
I think we're running down on our educational portion.
Let me just close with one thought. All of the specifics in here are probably going to change, right? So the actual numbers, potentially a lot of the dates, we'll just see. But I think as a game plan, these are structurally the steps we need to accomplish and how we accomplish them and when we accomplish to be determined. So I'd encourage you, if you want to, bring this along to future meetings. I think this is going to tie into our next discussion.
Documents going in my briefcase and staying there.
Okay,
so
there
it'll always be with me.
There we go. It's intended for that roadmap purpose. So.
And this is, there's no motion here. This is an educational
session.
No, this is
just, okay. We want the board to be fully informed of everything that's coming up because there's a lot of it. So we wanted to give you that roadmap now.
And agreed, it was well done.
Yes,
well done.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you. Probably a good time to take 5 minutes before you go to item number 9. I assume we have guests on this
one? We have guests. Yes, we do.